It's about making that first connection. Your first impression is perceived by the guest by how is your energy level. It's like the energy level is how the people are going to read. So I think energy and speaking with anybody at any time and just being hospitable it's the key to life, dude.
Hello, and welcome to the Randall O'Shea podcast, where we create a safe space for meaningful and thought-provoking conversations. We have long-form interviews with entrepreneurs, thought leaders, artists, and changemakers in order to deconstruct their journeys and to pass out valuable life lessons and life-changing perspectives for listeners like yourself, so that you can, as Randall says, learn their lessons without their scars. So whether you're tuning in on your daily commute or during a workout or cooking dinner, we are happy to have you join us. So take a seat, relax, grab a cup of tea, and join the conversation. Now, let's dive into this week's episode.
So today we have with us Justin Bonner, who is an executive chef who I've known for a long time. I don't know how many years, but it's been, what, since 2005-ish maybe? Does that sound about
Probably 2004. A long time.
2004? Yeah, I think so, somewhere in there, a long time. But yeah, I wanted to, you know, first give my appreciation to Justin for making time to spend with me on the podcast and go through this. So, Justin, how are you doing today?
Today is great. You know, every day after a hard day in a restaurant, you wake up, you're positive, you know, you just tackle the next topic, goals of your day. And from there, you move forward and just continue to grow and learn and be positive with life. So everything is great.
I love the attitude. So we covered this a little bit just as far as, I guess, the theme of this podcast. But for our listeners or new listeners, what I'm really interested in sort of like deconstructing individuals' journeys and how they got to where they're at, right? I've probably said this on other episodes before, but I'm always reminded of a Steve Jobs quote that he gave during a commencement speech for the University of Stanford, where he talks about, you know, you can't connect the dots looking forward, right? But as you look back, every event in your life, you know, led you to where you're at, right? There's connective tissue there. So Justin, I guess with that in mind, how did you become, you know, get from where you started to becoming an executive chef?
I guess what I've always loved to do is I've always enjoyed cooking. I grew up in a, you know, I guess not a poor family, but not a rich family in Western Pennsylvania. You know, my mom always took care of my brother and I when my father went on to make a living during the week there. So I didn't get to see him until the weekend. So she always cooked for the family day, night. And, you know, being my grandfather, my grandmother always cooked big family outings and stuff like that. And I was always intrigued. So when I turned 16 there, I started getting a restaurant job in a hotel, the Clarion Holiday Inn, which is still there. But I'm not anywhere what it was when I started, you know, bussing tables, whatever, working the buffets and shared an interest. So then I went to the kitchen and washed dishes and started learning salads and joined the line cook position. And I think before 18, I was running the Holiday Inn kitchen for 2 years without an executive chef while I was still in high school. And it really sparked my interest. And from there, just I got hungry, considered culinary school. But then I just kept asking questions, just exploring my exploration there of what happens when I do this? What happens when I combine these ingredients? And it just built me up to be a very strong culinary individual. And working all the way from through Clarion, Pennsylvania, there I moved to Arizona, where I worked at Nuba Marcus Cafe as the kitchen manager for 3 years, as well as I worked for a company called Houston's as a side gig. And from there, it's like, you know, I went to another major restaurant corporation in Phoenix, went all the way to California, was working at about a $4 or $5 million a year restaurant as a kitchen manager, like a second in command. And after that, I reached out to a friend of mine I knew in Arizona who was opening a place out in the Hamptons. And I guess I just came out here on a whim and a prayer, just through a phone call, you know, association from another person. And here I am. I find myself in my 12th summer as an executive chef out in Hampton Bays, Long Island, where we're going anywhere from $7 to $8 million a year annually, with our busiest season being obviously summer in the Hamptons would be, you know, May to early October, depending on the weather. So, I mean, that's kind of what put me here, and it's challenging myself every day. But it's very tough work. It's very stressful, but I enjoy what I do. I enjoy the stressful environment, and it's great to be able to think on your feet when you have something thrown at you, to be able to be like a fire marshal, to be able to prevent fires before they happen and see 20, 30 minutes, 40 minutes into a service, you know, where you have 65 menus dropped at you every 20 minutes, and you have a party on the lawn, and you have another party going upstairs, like private parties, and also dealing with the ghost for Uber Eats and DoorDash now, because those are really big opportunities for money in restaurants, but sometimes it's so busy, I just turn them off. Like, we have to take care of our guests in-house first. Yeah. But I mean, that's kind of a nutshell how I came up and where I'm at.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to make those business decisions to forgo the Uber Eats so you prioritize the next.
Yeah. You have to take care of the guests that are in house first before you have to take care of everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot there. Thank you for sharing. I wrote down some questions I wanted to follow up on. First, what was, you know, growing up, right? Like, your family cooked, and then you mentioned your grandparents and they would cook for family, like, holidays and things like that. Do you remember a favorite dish you had growing up, or your favorite family holiday dish or favorite holiday meal?
No, like, growing up in Pennsylvania, I mean, Randy, you should know as well as I do that anything like made back home is comfort food, and it's hard to put your finger on a favorite. But I would say top five would be like my grandmother's homemade canned tomatoes and macaroni and cheese, you know, where it's just like Longhorn cheddar baked on top of macaroni with canned tomatoes. So that's a favorite. My step-grandmother's five bean baked beans, just phenomenal. My mother's beef stew, ham and scalloped potatoes, you know, anything like that. Just like, you got my heart right there if I see any of that hit the table.
You had me at ham and scalloped potatoes. That's a forgotten one, but a favorite of mine as well. You know, part of my desire to do the podcast is, I think that through your story, there's a lot of things that people can take away, and if it catches the right person at the right time, I think it will help them on their journey to say, like, maybe become an executive chef or maybe get a job, right? So one of the things that you mentioned is that after you went to Arizona and then California, you knew somebody that was opening up a restaurant in Hampton Bay. Is that correct?
Well, one person that I worked with, and I'll leave names out of it just for, you know, appropriate reasons.
Yeah,
we worked in Arizona together and California. They knew each other through association for years prior to me working with them. My owner was opening a restaurant in Hampton Bays, and my affiliate that I worked with in Arizona, he had gone out as, you know, the liaison to get the restaurant open. And he's like, let me reach out to Justin. He's like, I know the perfect person to come out here that we need out here. Strong, very, very willed and very on hand, and I guess very experienced to run this restaurant. So that's when the phone call came in over, you know, I was actually at a current job, and it was a phone interview driving through, you know, he was driving his Jeep like through the woods or whatever. And he's like, yeah, he's like, be here next week. He's like, and you can start. And I'm like, all right, cool. So that's when I just packed up and I moved back to Pennsylvania, and then I drove out to Hampton Bays.
Yeah, nice. The thing there that it took me a while to learn this, and I wish I would have known it sooner, is that you get jobs by talking to people, right? And you get jobs through your network, and you get jobs and opportunities, more broadly speaking, I guess I'll say, you get opportunities from people,
right?
People think that they can go to maybe the traditional route if you're looking for a new opportunity, or if you're looking to become an executive chef, like, oh, I'll search a job board and see what's available out there. But that's not how the real world works. And if there's one piece of advice I have for people, like, in career transition, or, you know, maybe high school graduates or college graduates looking to start their career, it's just talk to as many people as you can, right? You don't need to necessarily ask them for a job, but talk to people, get them to know you, get to know them, show them your character, and you'll be in a situation more than likely, like Justin was, to become an executive chef of a new restaurant.
It's about connecting with people there, Randy. Whether you're going to see them again or whether you're going to see them tomorrow, it falls down to even like the hospitality business. It's about making that first connection. And, you know, when you walk up to, say you're walking up to a table to greet a table that sits down in the restaurant, your first impression is perceived by the guest by how is your energy level? You know, how is this person? Like, that's going to make their first impression. Is like, how are you approaching the table? Like, hey, welcome to the restaurant. You know, I'm such and such. How can I get you? Or like, hey guys, like, thanks for coming in today. Like, how are you doing? What's like, you know, what are we looking at today? Maybe some apps, some entree, like some apps, some drinks. Like, can I get you a margarita? Can I get you a whatever it may be, you know, like a buffalo shrimp, or like, can I get you some awesome like truffle fries we have, or, you know, would you like a glass of wine, or would you like our house sangria? It's like the energy level is how the people are going to read. And that's going to be like making a connection. So I feel like in hospitality, that can go along with anything. Yeah. As far as like, you know, you're meeting people standing in line at Subway to get a sandwich. You just happen to have great energy and you're saying hello and being friendly and courteous. It's like that energy could turn a conversation to somebody. Like, you could be standing beside a CEO for a multiple corporation. You have no idea, but you didn't make that initial, I guess, have that initial energy to spark a connection with anybody who would want to continue a conversation with you. So you could be standing beside Steve Jobs for all you know, or even like Elon Musk and not know who they are. But then you start a conversation and it just builds the grounds from there. So I think energy and speaking with anybody at any time and just being hospitable is, it's the key to life, dude.
Yeah, I would agree. And the thing that baffles me sometimes is, I mean, that's a skill set in itself. But to me, it's like, I guess it's easier for some people than it is maybe for others, just to be cognizant of the, like, your energy level and be open to having conversations with everybody and being nice and hospitable to the people that you encounter, right? Especially if you're doing it like as a business, right? But it baffles me that professionals don't do that as much as they should, or I don't see that as much as I would like to see it. And to me, that's the easy part, right? It's the easy part to be a human and express empathy and to inquire and ask how somebody's day is going, right? Like, if you're mad, for instance, if you call like a customer service line because you have an issue with a piece of technology or whatever, and you're already upset, but if you get somebody that has good energy, that is actually being empathetic and expressing concern, and you feel is being authentic and wanting to help you solve your problem, it de-escalates how you feel about it. And you might be able to get off the call and the problem's still not fixed because it has to be escalated, but you feel much better about the interaction because of how they treated you as a person, right?
Let's take a quick break from today's episode. If you're enjoying the conversation, please take a moment to look us up. You can find Randall on Instagram at Randall O'Shea, that's spelled at RANDALLOSCHE. And you can catch the show notes and other resources at randalloshea.com. And now back to the episode.
One of the things that I did want to touch on, and I was thinking about the different ways to ask this question. As an executive chef, I'm sure there's a lot on your plate, but my initial thought was, hey, Justin, what do you do as an executive chef? What does that look like on a day-to-day basis? But I think, and having worked in hospitality a little bit myself, not as an executive chef, of course, I'm sure different days look differently to you. So maybe just walk us through your week and what some of your main responsibilities are as an executive chef.
I guess for starters, I mean, especially in summertime, it varies from day to day to day. But I guess a good week synopsis would be Monday through Fridays, wrapping a restaurant like 7 a.m., sometimes 6 a.m. on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But we'll do Monday through Friday first quick here. You know, check in with my prep team downstairs, open up all the stations, make sure everything's properly rotated, nothing's out of date, taste check, quality check, everything like that. You know, I think some shelf life, start turning on the equipment, check in the orders as they are received, look at the lineup, make sure we have everybody in place for schedules, adjust the prep list for needs to be on a day-to-day basis, check out the reservations, see what we have, where our pops are going to be, make sure we have people, places, and things that we all need in place, you know, start to grab the products to bring upstairs because our prep team is in the basement of a restaurant. We're a three-story restaurant with the basement included. So we have ice machines in the basement, go up a flight of stairs, first floor of the restaurant, then we have a second floor of the restaurant, and we have also have ice machines outside. So you imagine like going up and down the stairs, there's 15 steps and we go up and down 1,000 times a day just to get to the prep kitchen and like the walk-ins downstairs. Start carrying product up for the team members when they start coming in to set up the prep list, you know, for the line upstairs. Jump in, help my team out. You start getting everything prepped, whether there's BEOs or parties. Start marking off all the proteins in the morning for the later parties. That way we're not interrupting service. We only have one kitchen for service. So everything has to be done in the morning. So you have to be very organized, very precise. And ultimately, I'd say the hardest part of my job is being organized. Time versus organization is the toughest part of my job where I'm at as an executive chef. And every other restaurant differs, have their pros and their cons and their weaknesses and their strengths. But I'd say my biggest challenge is time and preparedness / organization. But that's like Monday through Fridays. But I mean, like, that's on a normal day. But then even on the weekends, we open a half an hour earlier for brunch service. Obviously, you know, getting busier and busier. An example is yesterday I had $1,800 worth of produce come in before 11 o'clock. And that's a lot of produce. I don't know if anybody understands like how much in the case of tomatoes is. It's like $39, give or take. But $1,800 worth of produce is a lot. And then the day before I had an order come in, I had probably $14,000 worth of product come in on Saturday between fish. Big House, which would be Cisco and like another purveyor, DiCarlo, like our major, like our meats, our cheeses, our dairy, like all that kind of stuff. You know, so that's a lot of product. It's like probably 400 cases of product to come in that needs to be put away and organized, you know, before we open at 11:30. So I have a team of people helping me to put that away, but also I'm in the mix of helping on a Saturday, Sunday, like putting that kind of stuff away. So on top of what I said, the Monday through Friday with the organization, on top of that, on a bigger, heavier weekends, I mean, there's a lot of product to put away, and we're pushing 150,000, 175,000. We're not quite to $200,000 weeks, and that's just sales for the week for the restaurant. So, but we're getting there. And I think this year we're going to probably push like $220,000 to $240,000 weeks in sales, probably the month of August. But that's kind of like my day-to-day routine, I guess. Like, you know, at the end of the day, once I start winding down, my out times mean nothing. If I'm out at five, like that's just a general, that's a general inquiry of what time I leave. But obviously they're getting smacked in the window or the service is very, very busy. You know, I'm going to stick around and support my team. But usually after like everything's set off, I hand the torch off, you know, I'll go organize the walk-ins, make sure we have stuff ordered for the next parties coming up the next couple of days. But then I'll do the orders for the next day, make sure we have enough produce coming in. You know, I'll look over the schedule that my sous chef writes and make sure it's ready to post. It's in budget. We have enough coverage. Yeah, that's pretty much how like my week works. I mean, it's going to vary from week to week, but that's a general gist of what is accomplished by me, I guess, a week.
Yeah, man, that sounds like a lot of work and a lot of steps and a lot of heavy boxes of carrots.
So yeah, it is.
Kudos to you. Though not the only thing I'm thinking about, but is, do you have a step counter? Like, do you have a Fitbit or anything like that that counts your steps?
No, I used to. I think at one point I did. I think it was, I definitely was averaging 12,000 steps a day, and that was on a slower day. But I haven't had a Fitbit for a while, but I'm just curious, like, what it would be now. No. I also have a bad ankle, dude. I have a bad ankle too, and that just makes it even better.
I was just thinking, I was cleaning my shower over the weekend and I was like, oh, with this like soap scum, it gets a little slippery in here. Maybe I need to put down some anti-slip stuff. And I'm like, this is all internal dialogue that I'm having with myself. It's just like, I'm not as elastic as I used to be. If I fall, something's going to break and I'm not going to be able to bounce back. There's a lot of things that I would still like to get into, but just in the interest of time, maybe it's good if we come back and do a part two of this. But two questions that, and then you will wrap this up and we'll come back and do a part two. You know, in our lives, in our careers, and you can take this like either way, it doesn't have to be just about being an executive chef, but what's the biggest pivotal moment that you've had that has pushed you in the direction of where you're at? And it can be professionally, it can be personally, but what was like, can you think of any moment in time where if it would have gone a different direction, you would be doing something different or be somewhere different versus how it ended up going and it led you to where you're at today? Can you think of any like one most pivotal moment in your life journey thus far?
To be honest with you, I don't think I would be here if it wasn't for a few infractions with the law. You know, I had said some stupid things as young kids do, you know, it had to be on probation and stuff like that. And just, I guess, just knowing the crowd that you knew that we used to run around with there, Randy, some of them were a little bit more wild than others and some of them like to cause more problems, but not being associated with them, but just being known by name. And then, you know, judge back home calling my aunt and saying, once I was finished with all my stuff on paper, like, hey, I was free and clear to go. Don't worry about it. Him pushing me to go out of Clarion. Probably that pivotal point, that would not be here right now if he had to call my aunt and said, just tell Justin to get out of here before something happens. They're going to make a lot of us with a lot of people, and I don't want him drugged back into the system for something he didn't do. This is my guilty by association, I guess. And that's what that was a pivotal point in my life that pushed me to go to live out west. And, you know, I was like, I need a job. I didn't have a job for 5 weeks out there, but, you know, I found one. I dug my teeth in, dude, grabbed the bull by the horns. And I think that's what really elevated me to where the type of, I'm not that I was a bad person, but elevated me to the work the workmanship that I create now is what that put me at. And it's strive for me to be the best I can. And that's why I'm making six figures, working in one of the greatest vacation spots in the world. It's the Hamptons, you know, and it's great. I mean, I love it.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. And I think for a lot of people, Western Pennsylvania, having grown up there myself, doesn't offer a lot to a lot of people. And I think one of the pieces of advice, regardless of any sort of infraction with the law or not, is that the world is a very large place and there's lots of opportunities outside of where you happen to have grown up. So whether it's Western Pennsylvania or somewhere else in like Appalachia or, you know, any sort of rural town, that the world's a big place and there's lots of opportunities. You just have to be willing to take the jump and do what Justin did. To, you know, kind of go out and brave the big bad world and see what's there. Shout out to that, I guess you said, a judge for talking to your aunt. But I mean, that's killer advice, you know, for him to take the time to have that conversation. I think that that's a really, you know, really like shout out to him for going out of his way and having that conversation. Because from your standpoint, obviously, that was a pivotal moment. And you know, if he didn't take the time and have that conversation with your aunt, who knows, right? Could be better, could be worse, but that has certainly pushed you in a direction where executive chef and living a good life. The last question before we wrap up here, what's the one piece, the most impactful piece of advice that you wish you could pass on to your younger self?
I guess I would say, don't hold yourself back. Take those risks. I guess what I'm trying to say, Aunt Randy, is don't overthink things. You know, don't overthink things. Take the risk and keep your head on straight. And I think I would have even come a little bit more on top if I would have just had a little more confidence in myself and just pushed myself a little bit harder instead of being hesitant on jumping on an action or something like that.
Yeah, I think I would agree. I mean, that is just, that's another question I try to be careful with how I ask. But like one of those things is taking risks. I was very risk adverse, you know, through, I don't want to say most of my life. I don't know. Like the time frame or duration I would want to say there. But taking risks is something in my adult life that I've had to grow into. And I did it like deliberately and consciously because I realized that there was other opportunities out there. But to get those other opportunities, I would have to step outside of my comfort zone to, you know, have the opportunity, grab the bull by the horns and take it from there. But Justin, I just want to say, as we wrap up here, I appreciate your time. I appreciate your authenticity. I appreciate you sharing your journey to where you're at. And I'm hopeful that somebody that needs to hear this from somebody else outside of their circle network listens and they take some of your life wisdom thus far and apply it to their journey. And that gets them further faster. But appreciate the time, Justin. Any final thoughts you'd like to share with the listeners or share maybe, you know, what you're working on next, if anything?
No new projects next. I definitely always still have a food truck in mind. That's my next adventure. Traveling across the states with my own culture of food truck where I bring a taste of Long Island to Dallas, Texas, or, you know, Austin, Texas, or I bring a New Orleans, Louisiana food to Southern California. That's kind of a theme I'm going for where each different area of the United States there start out as kind of a different theme of food. Bring in taste of Miami to Arizona. Just that's kind of my project going on the side there. Don't want to be working in, I guess, multi-million-dollar, you know, kitchen until I'm 55 years old. I'm not having time to spend with the family and stuff like that. Yes, it's been great. And yes, it's a great aspect to do, but it's a very tough life to find some balance. So I'm trying to work towards that goal of having a mobility and traveling and seeing the different countrysides and just doing what I love, and that's cooking and seeing people's faces when they eat my food. That's the biggest reward, is seeing the people's reactions of how good my food is when they eat it. And that's why I do what I do.
I love it, man. I love it. Let me know when the food truck happens. I'll make sure I'll stop by wherever you're at. But again, Justin Bonner, executive chef, signing off. See you guys later.
And that's it for today's conversation here on the Randall O'Shea podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, and we hope that you've enjoyed listening as much as we've enjoyed recording it. Many, many thanks to our guests today for sharing their knowledge, their experience, and their life lessons. If you found today's conversation insightful, interesting, inspiring, please join our growing community by subscribing to the Randall O'Shea podcast on your favorite podcast platform and never ever miss another episode. We'd love to hear your feedback, so keep the community alive by sharing your takeaways from today's episode and use the hashtag Randall O'Shea podcast. Your feedback and interaction fuels our continued efforts to build a safe space for meaningful, long-form conversations. So thank you so much for the support. Until next time, stay curious, stay inspired, and keep the conversation going.